From the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, this is Deconstructing Dinner.
And welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, produced in Nelson, British Columbia at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY, and heard on radio stations around the world, including CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers, BC. I'm John Steinman. In May 2010, Deconstructing Dinner immersed itself into the field of ethnobiology. Ethnobiology being the scientific study of relationships among peoples, plants, animals, and environments. It's a field of research that Deconstructing Dinner has come to recognize represents an invaluable depth of knowledge for anyone interested in the subjects of food security and food sovereignty. As peoples throughout the Western world increasingly are seeking to reconnect with their food, there's a lot to be learned from ethnobiologists, and in particular, their research subjects, most often indigenous peoples around the world who are too seeking to protect and maintain their relationships with their environments and their food. These relationships are in almost all cases incredibly dynamic and can offer all peoples some critical wisdom and knowledge on how we can all responsibly preserve existing food systems and build new ones. Having spent many days attending two ethnobiology conferences held on Vancouver Island, we now have in our possession and ready to share an inspiring series of recordings, which over the coming weeks and months will make up this Exploring Ethnobiology series here on Deconstructing Dinner. In the coming weeks and months, we'll be learning about many topics that revolve around this subject of ethnobiology. We'll be listening to a one-on-one interview with well-known Canadian ethnobiologist Nancy Turner of the University of Victoria, who will describe in detail what ethnobiology is, where the field of research is going, and how ethnobiology can play a role in supporting the principles of food security and food sovereignty. To share a list of upcoming topics that we will be covering, here are just a few of those: the ethnobiology of beekeeping, commercial harvesting of bush foods in Central Australia, reinstating indigenous food practices in an urban landscape, the immaterial components of food sovereignty, traditional harvesting of eelgrass off the northern coast of Vancouver Island, the use of salt and salt substitutes among the Cherokee, and cereal grain farming in Iroquois. So those are just some of the topics that we'll be featuring as part of this Exploring Ethnobiology series. But launching the series today, we'll hear audio from what might stand as the most inspiring session that we recorded. It was a forum of Indigenous youth who have recently been engaged in a digital storytelling project. As is now commonly found among many Indigenous communities worldwide, many of the youth have become significantly, if not entirely, disconnected from the traditional ways of their ancestors. One of the responses to this threat that some of those youth have employed is found among the Nuchalnuth people, whose territory stretches 300 kilometers along the Pacific coast of Vancouver Island. Nuchalnuth, which translates to all along the mountains and sea, are a family of 15 First Nations, and connecting some of their youth has been the Nashuk Youth Council, a project of Uathluk, the Nuchalnuth Tribal Council's Aquatic Management Board. Uathluk enables 15 of their First Nation communities to work collaboratively with other governments and groups for the sustainable management and economic development of ocean resources within their territories. Involved in carrying out that role has in part been the Nashuk Youth Council, who have been seeking out stories and knowledge from their elders about their people's traditional foodways. Those stories and knowledge are in turn being shared digitally by the youth through short videos that each of them have since produced. In May 2010, the Nashuk Youth Council took to the podium at the 12th International Congress of Ethnobiology hosted in the community of Tofino. The gathering brought together ethnobiologists and others interested in the field from around the world to share their research and stories. For the next hour, we'll hear from those youth, we'll listen in on their digital stories, and we'll also hear from others at the forum who shared their heartfelt comments on the importance of young people like the Nashuk Youth Council, who are seeking out their heritage and their way of life through food. The forum was launched with introductions from some of the Youth Council members, including some introductory words from the chair of the Nashuk Youth Council, 18-year-old Nikki Watts of the Tashat First Nation in Port Alberni. Nikki also introduced and shared her short film titled Pool of Cheap Labor, which, like the many clips we'll be listening to today, are all linked to in their original visual format at deconstructingdinner.ca.
Hi everyone, my name is Nikki Watts and I'm from Tishot, Port Alberni area, and I'm chair of the Youth Council.
Hello and welcome everybody. My name is Keenan Jules. I'm from Tishot and Kayukit. I am part of the Nashuk Youth Council.
Hello. My name is Herbert Mountain, but I would rather go called by Tony. And I'm from Alert Bay in Stony Creek. And I've been part of for Nuss Truck for a couple of months now.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. My name is Damon Vantaren Tarampanen. I am from Ahouse in Heshkowit. I've been part of Nuss Truck Youth Council since it began for a couple of years now.
So basically what we're going to talk about today is youth participation and leadership and youth being more active in like their communities and everything that involves our future, because most of you guys are working towards future and for the next generation. We're going to be talking about just being involved in everything, especially with our youth council. We've been jumping into things that usually youth aren't involved in, and people have been coming to us and asking for youth voices. And part of our youth council is about learning about our heritage and where we come from. A lot of youth today our age, and especially in the communities, don't know where they come from and their heritage. So I will be showing my digital story up next, and it's about me and my family and where I come from and my daughter and traditional foods. And when my digital story comes up, you will see that my daughter will not be eating the traditional foods. Instead, she'll be eating something else. Yeah. That's good. Okay.
Our elders talk about how, with the new generations, we are losing the knowledge, that it is disappearing before our very eyes. With every elder who passes, the stories pass with them. Along with the stories, we are losing traditions, the way we used to live as First Nations. With our new houses, our cars, and our drive-through food, we as First Nations people are losing who we are. When the white man first came and built the residential schools, he wanted us to change so that we acted like them, to change everything about us as people. They wanted us to be a pool of cheap labor for their industries, and if they could, they would have changed our skin color too. The whole purpose of the schools were to change who we were, to change the way we live, to kill our culture, and we fought it. We as people fought it so hard. Then finally, when the potlatch ban was over and the last residential school was closed, we celebrated. We were accepted, finally. But now, our young ones are refusing to learn, to keep everything we fought so hard for. So after all this time, we may lose what we have tried so hard to keep, and it's our children who are going to change everything. Now which way they go? It's up to us, not them, us. Now today, as the tradition dies, what happens to our children, the new generations? I'm a teen mom. I can date my heritage back 8 generations, back to when we lived in the Broken Group Islands, with no electricity, and we hunted, fished, and harvested our food. There was a recent expedition of painted ceremonial curtains at UBC where my family's traditional curtain with me and my daughter was depicted, and that curtain contained all the women and the generations on it. My name is Nikki Watts. I'm Tishaw First Nations from Port Alberni, BC. My native name is Heta'uk, which means into the fire. I'm 18 years old. I was 15 when I had my daughter. She is now 2. Before I had my daughter, I didn't see what was important, what I needed to do for my community. Now I'm part of a First Nations Youth Council. I'm the chair, actually. I'm one of those few First Nations youth who are trying my hardest to keep this culture alive, to see it going strong, even after the elders have all gone. My mother grew up with my great-grandmother, and because of that, she holds a lot of the old values and traditions. My great-grandmother's name was Elizabeth Gallick, and my mother lived with my great-grandmother because her mother was an alcoholic. And normally, you wouldn't think that would be a blessing. But because of it, my mother holds a lot of knowledge and brings it down to me and my daughter. When my mom was still a teenager, she was acknowledged by an old man from a house named Kamina during a tribal council meeting. He gave her a carved and painted paddle and said, "You are the best dancer of your generation of Nuchanoth women." We still hold that paddle in our house today. I come from a very respected family because we still hold many of the traditions brought down from generation to generation. And because we still hold many of the traditions, we still use medicine found around us and harvest right from our homeland. When we get sick, we drink tea from certain tree bark. We pick berries in the summer, fish in the spring, herring eggs right after winter. We pick cedar bark from May to June, and crab all year round.
That was the audio from the digital story produced by Nikki Watts of the Nashuk Youth Council. The video was presented in May 2010 at the International Congress of Ethnobiology held in Tofino. The visual version of her story, along with the many others that we'll be hearing on today's show, are archived online and linked to from the Deconstructing Dinner website. Another digital story shared at the forum was produced by Waylon Andrews and titled Taking the Sting Out of Nettle. The story was introduced by Keenan Jules, who first shared his thoughts about the digital storytelling project.
I'm going to talk about how great of a tool it is for youth, that being that we live in a technology-based society. Everyone is on computers. Everyone uses them for everything. So it's a great way, it's a great tool for youth because it's easy to do. We could simply just take pictures and edit it on a computer and use that and present it to other youth, what we have learned in a simple matter that we understand, and show it on the internet, on iPods, and there's just so many ways that we could present it and show what we have learned to everybody out there in the world. Last month we went to Victoria to do this. This is where we made all our digital stories. And it was a fun experience, very easy, and I could see how youth would enjoy doing this. And that being said, I would like to introduce videos that other youth along with us who went with us to Victoria have. I would like to show their videos.
My name is Waylon Andrews. I am the son of Jessica Chenery. One bright, sunny day, the two of us, my little brother, and two of my friends, Andrew and Carl, went out to harvest stained nettle. After a few stings and more than a few groans, we started to get into the swing of it. Walking deeper and deeper into the forest, we found larger patches of nettle. Taking just as much as we needed, we decided to start heading back. After falling and sinking into many mud pits, we were all covered in dirt and grime, my brother most of all. We finally made our way back home and started to research uses for nettle. We found out that you can use it for surprisingly strong rope, very healthy tea, you're able to steam it and eat it, use it for an energy drink or help for arthritis. It's a great natural fertilizer and is one of the healthiest greens in the world. We also found a way to bring down the sting of the nettle with another plant called plantain. After chewing the leaves of the plantain into a paste, rub the paste onto the area that you have been stung. Within a half hour, you should begin to feel relief. Stinging nettle grows in larger quantities in areas that have been disturbed. Clearings, rich soil areas, ancient villages, and median areas. It is an uncertainty between many people if nettle is indigenous or if it was introduced from Europe. Both may be true. North America has types of nettle that are not found in Europe and vice versa. Named Indian spinach, both Coast Salish and interior tribes ate the young leaves and stems. But no one is sure if this always happened or if it was introduced by Europeans. As a rope, stinging nettle is incredibly strong. The First Nations would use it to make fishing nets, snares, and tup lines. To treat arthritis with it, they would whip the plant across the area that had hurt, and it was said to help, but maybe you just don't notice the arthritis when you were stinging all over. The flavor of the nettle is similar to spinach, and eaten almost the same way. The boiling or steaming of the plant softens the stinging hairs to the point that they are ineffective, though I always found that my mouth buzzed a little bit after eating it. Elders would use the water from boiled nettles as a weak but very healthy tea. The nettle plant can vary from 3 to 7 feet high and is covered in very fine, soft hairs, as well as harder stinging hairs tipped with a barb that comes off when brushed against. It then injects 3 different chemicals that have really long names, so they must not be great to have in your body. Nettle today is one of the most valuable herbal remedies and can treat anything from excessive bleeding to breaking down kidney stones. This is a plant that we will all want around, and hopefully it will be for a long, long time.
Waylon Andrews and his digital story titled Taking the Sting Out of Nettle. Nikki Watts and Waylon Andrews' digital stories are great introductions into the other youth productions that we'll be listening to on today's show, but also speaking at the forum and providing another great introduction into the work of the Nashuk Youth Council was John Rampinen of the Ahauset and Tlaukiat First Nations. John has worked closely with the youth on their digital storytelling project. He believes that the battle that these youth are taking on is the toughest one his people have ever undertaken. Because the departure from traditional ways that so many Indigenous communities are struggling with is most noticed among youth.
The Nechanoth people are a proud people. We are a wailing people. We are warriors. And perhaps underlying all of that, we are storytellers. Since time immemorial, since the first days of creation for our people, our teachings have been passed on generation to generation through the form of storytelling. We call it Himwitsa. The teaching stories. Traditionally, it was our grandparents that would sit with us in Hahupa, young grandchildren, up to about the age of 5 or 6. They would spend day in and day out with their grandchildren, teaching them through many, many stories that we had. Stories of their own life experiences, stories with colorful characters that had, you know, all of these wonderful underlying morals. And these stories would be told repeatedly throughout our lives. They would be told to us at different intervals, different stages of our life, and they would bear with them different meanings, different purposes. We would interpret them differently depending on what stage of life we were in. So as a child, we may hear one story and we would gather certain pieces of knowledge and information from it. As an adolescent, we would hear that exact same story and we would again interpret it differently and carry with us a different message, a different moral. And again, as adults, we would listen to the story and we would again receive different teachings and information from those same stories. And of course, when we became elders ourselves, we would pass those teachings back on, and the continuous cycle of those stories and the impact of them, the meaning of them, would continue to move forward. So for thousands of years, our people had formed this way of life that was crafted here in this specific region of the world. We established this relationship, this connection with the environment around us, with the land. We became masters of the sea. We established a spiritual connection and recognition of all life that was around us and started to appreciate the interconnectedness that we hold as human beings with all of life that surrounds us, whether it's a rock or a tree or an animal or a fellow human being. We appreciate and respect that there's a spiritual aspect to everything around us. And that spirituality has been integral to our survival as First Nations peoples. Our ability to prepare ourselves, to cleanse ourselves, to protect ourselves, has staved off disease and illness and sicknesses and other things for thousands of generations. But over just a matter of a few generations, that has all changed. It's changed very abruptly for our people. And now we're living in a time and a reality where we need to reflect back on this recent history and start to identify what is it that changed? What are those fundamental pieces within our way of life that changed? And where did that change come from? And how has that change impacted us? And how can we shift back to a more traditionally based lifestyle? Through some of the work that we've been doing with the Nashuk Youth Council, we recognize also that we can't go back to a completely traditional way of life. But we appreciate that there are some fundamental strengths and values that exist in the teachings of our grandparents that need to stay alive. But they need to be told in a different way as well. We've also recognized that many young people today do not connect very strongly or meaningfully anymore with their grandparents. And we recognize that this is an area that needs to be strengthened. So Nashuk Youth Council has done their part to shorten that gap between the elders and between the youth. And they've used a series of different tools. You've heard some of the impacts of colonization that my nephew Damon shared earlier. The onset of disease like measles and smallpox when Europeans first started to arrive, the development of the Indian Act system, the incorporation of the residential school system, the banning of our potlatch and our ceremonies, which lasted for approximately 67 years. There were many, many hardships that were put in front of our people over the last short little while in our history. And what really encourages me is the fact that our people still remain. Our people, our culture, our spirituality is still there. It has survived through all of this, through all of these hardships. And there's still something that is still intact. that our elders carry with them in their memories. And they need to pass that off and hand that off to the next generation so that they can use their voice, so that their voice becomes stronger, so that they can share it, not only with their peers within their communities, but with people worldwide, to say, this is who we are as New Channel people. This is our ancestry. This is where we come from. This is what makes us who we are. This is what makes us proud to be who we are. And they've done a wonderful job of this so far. One of the tools that they have been using, we call digital storytelling. So what we do is we recognize that the generation of today is born into a technologically advanced society compared to even the generation that I was from, and definitely from my parents and my grandparents. And so we've also recognized that that lifestyle contributes to that gap that exists between elders and youth. Many of our elders are computer illiterate, have difficulties with accessing different sites or different internet sort of opportunities that are out there, and yet the youth are very well versed in that and engage in a lot of social networking and different measures within that particular realm. So we recognize that this is a weakness, this is a deficiency, but it can also be turned around like a double-edged sword. It can also be used as an opportunity for our people. And so what we've done over the last few months is we've brought elders and youth together here in Tofino from around Vancouver Island and have encouraged those conversations to take place. We've encouraged the elders to share teachings with a theme around traditional Indigenous foods, the knowledges, the practices around those foods, and we've encouraged those conversations to happen. And not only for those conversations to take place between the elders and the youth, but we've encouraged the youth to document those conversations, to record it with audio equipment, to record it with digital cameras, and then to edit it later on and to share those teachings with their peers within their communities. And perhaps even more importantly than that is not just having the conversation and documenting and sharing it, but it's taking it back into your community and breathing life back into those practices. We feel that it's very important not only to talk about who we are, who we were, what our practices were, what the knowledge is that the ancestors passed on to us, but even more importantly is we need to bring those practices back and to make them alive again. And these youth are doing a wonderful job of providing that service to our communities. I mentioned earlier that we are a whaling people, we're a warrior people, and I recognize these young people as being warriors among our communities. And I really commend them for the work that they do, because the battle, the confrontation that they are taking on is probably the hardest one that we have had to endure as First Nations peoples, because it has absorbed right into who we are. Internally, we are struggling to maintain our connection with our spirituality, with our culture, and with our language, because there's a dominant society that surrounds us and influences us and has instilled those changes within our way of life. And yet these young people bravely take it on a day-to-day basis and encourage others. And in fact, their numbers continue to grow. And that's really optimistic and really hopeful to see that that's taking place. So digital storytelling is a tool that we use, one of the tools. And we use it to build our communities, to rebuild our culture, and to tell those stories. You know, these stories that these young people have to share are important to be heard and to be shared afterwards. So I'd encourage all of you, as witnesses and observers to the stories that they share, to continue that gift of generosity that they're sharing today and share it with others. Pass it on to other people, especially to other young people in other Indigenous communities, so that they may learn from some of the efforts that are taking place here, or vice versa, that we may learn from other efforts that are happening in other places as well. So with that, you know, I just, again, commend the work that Nashuq Youth Council has been providing to our communities, and I look optimistically and hopefully towards a much brighter future for these young people, for my children, and for their next generations as well. Thank you. Chu.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, and that was John Rampinen of the Ahouset and Tlokwiat First Nations addressing the 12th International Congress of Ethnobiology held in Tofino, British Columbia. Deconstructing Dinner attended the Congress, and today's episode marks part one of our series, Exploring Ethnobiology. Ethnobiology is a scientific field of research involving the relationships among people, plants, animals, and ecosystems. On this part one of the series, we're listening to recordings from a youth forum where all delegates at the Congress listened in on the work of the Nashuk Youth Council. Shared as part of the forum were the digital stories described by John Rampin, and two of them we heard earlier on the show. And yet another digital story produced as part of the project was created by Belinda Lucas.
Hello, my name is Belinda Lucas. I am a young lady from Heshkwit First Nations. I am a student attending the Vast Education Center and a member of the Nashuk Youth Council. Our youth council was brought together about a year and a half ago. We came together because all of us wanted to do the same thing. We wanted to learn more about our culture, language, traditions, and where we come from. We also wanted to get more youth involved in learning our Nechonic ways. Our very first gathering was held in a house. It was a really good turnout. Our second gathering was held in Banfield, and the third was held in Tassus. This past year, we have traveled back and forth to Tofino for retreats. We have learned a lot about in the past couple of months. The Ahazit singers met us in Tofino to teach us some songs and share a dinner with us. That same evening, Tom Curley came in and talked about our traditions. He told us, "Don't be scared to speak out loud because everyone wants to hear what you have to say. Don't worry about making mistakes because no one will care." Our youth council learned a lot together, such as how to harvest fish eggs. We learned little bits of language, a few songs and dances. We learned about medicines, and we learned about the role of Atai Hatwell, the chief. We went for some forest walks with Giselle Martin and learned about trees and plants you can eat. We learned a lot of different traditions from elders who are from different tribes. We are now learning how to host a conference. Being a part of this youth council has really made a big change in my life. I have learned how to respect myself, others around me, and the environment. It has shown me I am not alone and that we are all one. This youth council has helped me remember who I am as a young Nechonic lady. Being a part of a group like this just makes me understand how important it is to learn our language, culture, and traditions, not only for me, but for the younger generation of kids. I love teaching my little brother what I have learned and what I am still learning today. Traditional foods is a big part of my life. I have learned a lot from my elders. I love listening to my elders because it is so important for our future. The Nashuk Youth Council has brought me joy and pride to be who I am today.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, produced in Nelson, British Columbia at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY. I'm John Steinman. You were just listening to a digital story produced by Belinda Lucas of the Nashuk Youth Council. Another of the youth members sharing their thoughts at the Ethnobiology Conference in Tofino was Damon Van Tarrant Rampinen from Ahauzit in Port Alberni. Before Damon shared his digital story with the Congress, he spoke about colonization and residential schools, stories of which remind us of some of the key points in time when traditional indigenous foods and practices were lost. His recounting of events also helps reinforce why the work of sharing stories on traditional foods is so important among indigenous youth.
I'm going to be talking about kind of the past things, topics that we've been covering through the past years with Nananiksu Hahopa, meaning passing on the grandparents' teachings. And with that, I'm going to be talking about colonization and residential schools. But before I get into that, I just want to say, the first step in engaging youth and hearing their voices is getting youth involved and informed. One way to do this is through peer education. We first got involved with Youth Luck and learning about our culture and shaping our future through peer education, and learned about Nechonic history and culture, and then taught it to the youth. Nananiksu Hahopa, meaning sharing the grandparents' teachings. Through the past years, we have been learning about our history and culture, such as traditional ways to gather food, medicine, everyday tools, and language. We have went back as far as the Europeans and made our way through a timeline to present day. We have talked about colonization in when Europeans first came here and put First Nations people on reservations and started residential schools. Residential school was one of the biggest impact in our history when Europeans first arrived. The effects of colonization on First Nations people was big. They made us change who we are from the way we dress to everyday life and how it slowly downsized the First Nations people population. In 1778, Captain James Cook was discovered by New Chalmers First Nations. In 1868, Act for the Gradual Civilizations of Indian Peoples is passed, also known as the Indian Act. And with that, there was creations of reserves, the Puppet Band Council was established, and Canadian government defines Indian by based on blood quantum. 1884, a law prohibiting feasts, potlatches, smokehouses, sundances, marriage ceremonies, and etc. And in 1890, residential school systems was put into effect. When residential schools were started, children were taken away from families and forced to learn and adapt to new teachings of Europeans. They were told to forget everything they know, as in their language, songs, dances, and teachings from the grandparents. First Nations kids were beaten if they spoke the language and highly punished to the point where kids shut down in fear. They didn't have names in residential schools. They were given numbers, and to this day, there are still people that still know their numbers. Young children were raped by the people involved because they couldn't do anything about it, and if they tried, they would be punished, such as beaten. To this day, youth are colonizing ourselves by the clothes we wear and the games we play, and how we must buy something because so-and-so has it, and if you don't have it, you don't want to be known as the kid without Call of Duty or an iPod.
Damon Van Tarrant Rampinen, speaking in May 2010. Damon also shared his digital story, which he produced as part of the Nashik Youth Council's efforts to share stories about their traditional indigenous foods. Damon's digital story is about his grandfather and titled Veris Alku, or New Beginnings.
I'd like to introduce my video, and it means a lot to me. My video is about a man who moved here when he was 7 years old from Finland. He was born in 1943 during World War II, and it was very hard at that time, so he migrated to Canada. That man would be my grandfather, John Rampinen. His Finnish name is Kalevi Johannes Rampinen, and yeah, I'd like to show you my video.
My name is Damon Van Tarrant Rampinen. I'm in Nechamath youth from Mahouset. My First Nations name is Tuhwach Esh Eth, who means whale jumping out of the water. And I live in Port Alberni, and I'm part of a youth council who are getting back in touch with their history and culture. And I want to talk about a man who means so much to me and has given me teachings throughout my life. When I think about traditional foods, I think about my papa. He has helped my family return to our traditional territory called Sitra Bay. He fishes, he sets out traps, he hunts deer, he knows what's good to use for medicine and what's bad. He's an all-together, everything kind of guy. Although he's not New Chalmuth, he has acquired a lot of skills and knowledge of our people, and he passes this on to his grandchildren. My papa is a very unique person. Although he was not born here, he has made a strong connection to the land, and this is his story. My papa was born in Loviisa, Finland, during World War II. His given name is Kalevi Johannes Rampinen. He was born December 25, 1943. After World War II, Finland was in war debt with Russia, and life was hard. After the war, Kalevi's father, Joel, was a mason and sauna maker. One day, a healthy Finnish Canadian was admiring his sauna that he built and invited Joel and his family to move to Canada. Kalevi moved here to Canada with his family, his father Joel Rampinen, his mother Lempi Rampinen, his sister Silke and her husband Oke, and brothers Vilko, Yelmar, and Eric and Danny. They wanted a new beginning, but adjusting here at first was difficult because of new culture, new language, and new change. And that prompted Kalevi to change his name to John. His family took a vacation to British Columbia and fell in love immediately because it reminded them of Finland. Through the 1960s and 70s, John traveled throughout BC as a logger and a fisherman. As an outsider to Canadian culture, he was always closer to First Nations people. His willingness to learn and connection with nature provided him the opportunity to gain teachings from the First Nations people. John married Charlotte Zecher in the mid-1970s. They had been together for 39 years and legally for 35 in 1975. They started a family together, Tamara, Joe James, and John Rampin, and each had been taught traditional culture and food, and to this day, John still teaches his family traditional ways. One day, John went to a restaurant, and they were waiting to order some food, and the waitress brought out a bottle of ketchup. Not knowing what this red, thick liquid was, because there was no such thing as ketchup in Finland, they wanted to be polite and eat it. Soon after they had finished having this mysterious red stuff, and the waitress came back and saw that they had finished it, she came back with an even bigger bottle of ketchup, and they all started to shout, "No more, no more!" When my papa told us this story, it brought back joyful memories of his past with his brothers and sister. I haven't seen my papa laugh so hard in my life. My papa has been a big inspiration in my life because he proves that you don't need to be a First Nations person to live the lifestyle and culture. And I am grateful for all the teachings my grandfather has passed down and continues to teach me every day. And I will continue his teachings to the future grandchildren when I am older.
Big John. Big John. Every morning at the mine, you can see him arrive. He stood six.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, and that was the digital story produced by Damon Van Tarrant Rampinen and shared with delegates of the International Congress of Ethnobiology held in Tofino, British Columbia. Damon is a member of the Nashuk Youth Council. The digital story, which is also available in video format and linked to from the Deconstructing Dinner website, was presented in May 2010 to the 12th International Congress of Ethnobiology held in Tofino, BC. Deconstructing Dinner attended the Congress, and today marks part one of our Exploring Ethnobiology series, which will be featuring recordings from the Tofino Gathering and another conference held just prior to that one in Victoria. The Nashuk Youth Council, whose work we're featuring on the show today, is a project of UAFLUK, the Nuchalnuth Tribal Council's Aquatic Management Board. The Nuchalnuth people are made up of many First Nations whose territory comprises much of the Pacific coast of Vancouver Island, with many of those communities losing touch with their traditional ways of life and, as is the focus of today's show, their traditional foods. Many Nuchalnuth youth are learning about those traditional foods by accessing the knowledge from their elders and sharing those stories digitally, producing short films made up of photos and recorded storytelling. Another of the youth who spoke earlier and who also shared his thoughts about the Nashuk Youth Council before sharing his digital story was Keenan Jules.
I'll just start off by listing a couple accomplishments that we have accomplished over. So last month we were in Victoria and we were named 2010 Food Champions for all the hard work. For our hard work and dedication and learning traditional foods, traditional ways of getting this food and fishing. We have organized and planned a youth conference for a year. It's taken a year to plan it and prepare, and we have been learning the importance of our culture, what it means to us, and how important it is to keep that tradition going throughout the generations. For the past few months, we have been learning song and dance from our teacher, Greg Charlson. He has been teaching us the Nuchalnuth anthem and a dance, the Kwikwathla, Chikna dance. And we are going to be doing those songs and dances in our youth conference coming up. So it should be exciting. So basically our future goal is to learn all our traditions and hopefully learn our language more, maybe eventually fluently, and pass this on as we grow older and there's more youth around us, and influence other youth to learn their tradition too and learn where they come from and how important it is to keep this tradition alive as it is fading as the time wears on.
And here's Keenan Jewell's digital story.
Hello, my name is Keenan Jules. I am from Port Alberni. I come from Tishot and Kayukit, and I am part of the Nashik Youth Council. Over the years, many factors have come into play that have affected our resources for gathering our traditional food. Factors such as the arrival of the Europeans, introduction of newer unhealthy foods, and our ecosystem take an enormous impact over the years. Fast food has played a huge role in the way we as First Nations people live and eat. Over time, we have almost completely stopped eating our traditional foods and eat fast foods that are affecting our health almost daily. Environmental contaminant has been a long-standing concern for First Nations people since the early 1960s. Mining, energy and forestry projects, chemical pollution from industries, toxic waste management, depletion of the ozone layer, and global warming have disrupted ecosystems and have caused climate change affecting species population and has endangered some wildlife and disrupted natural cycles. Before Europeans arrived, ulekin grease was a prime trading item, and the Kwakwaka'wakw people eagerly anticipated the arrival of ulekin each year. And First Nations people could fish and hunt without any laws forbidding us to hunt and fish. When the Europeans arrived, it wasn't long before Europeans had begun to trade foods from their homelands. Foods like flour, beef, chicken, pork, sugar, molasses, and other items such as alcohol and tobacco were shipped in by the ton. In short time, all the indigenous foods our people ate were quickly replaced with the foods that Europeans introduced. Now in present day, we are affected more than ever by the excessive consumption of unhealthy foods, where we once gathered food on a daily basis and interacted with the environment. We have now become dependent upon grocery stores and our daily food. Before the colonization of our territories and the introduction of new foods, there was little to no accounts of critical diseases among our people.
The digital story of Keenan Jules of the Nashik Youth Council. On today's episode of Deconstructing Dinner, we're launching our series titled Exploring Ethnobiology, a series that was sparked by our new interest here on the show to take a closer look into this relatively unknown field of research. Ethnobiology is the scientific study of relationships among peoples, plants, animals, and environments, a subject that Deconstructing Dinner has come to recognize represents an invaluable depth of knowledge for anyone interested in the subjects of food security and food sovereignty. As peoples throughout the Western world increasingly are seeking to reconnect with their food, there's a lot to learn from ethnobiologists, and in particular their research subjects, most often indigenous peoples around the world who are too seeking to protect and maintain their relationships with their environments and their food. In May 2010, Deconstructing Dinner traveled to Vancouver Island to attend two conferences on ethnobiology, one in Victoria and one in Tofino. On today's part one of the series, we've been hearing from Indigenous youth who spoke as part of a forum at the International Congress of Ethnobiology in Tofino, where they shared their successful efforts to access traditional food knowledge from their elders and share it through digital stories, stories that we've been listening to on today's show. The youth are mostly a part of the Nashik Youth Council, a project of Uathluk, an organization of the Nuchalnuth people. The Nuchalnuth Tribal Council represents 15 First Nations spread out throughout the Pacific coast of Vancouver Island. Taking us through to the end of the show today, we'll listen to three more digital stories of Nuchalnuth youth and another from a youth of the Kwakwaka'wakw group of First Nations on northern Vancouver Island and who lives in Victoria. We'll also hear some remarks made by the president of the International Society of Ethnobiology, who, like many of the delegates at the Congress, were deeply inspired by the work of these youth and who were left inspired as well to return to their countries and communities and share the work of the Nashik Youth Council with their youth at home. But first, another digital story produced by Letitia Rampinen about a three-day digital harvest gathering in Tofino, where youth and elders met to discuss the digital storytelling project that we've been showcasing here on the show today.
My name is Letitia Rampinen, L-E-T-I-T-I-A. I am a young First Nations woman from Nuchalnuth Territory, Hausa and Heshkwet. I am also a mother to a one-year-old boy named Maddox, M-A-D-D-E-X-X, who is from Hupichisit. The last few months, I have been given the opportunity to assist the Youth and Elder Digital Harvest Workshop at the Botanical Gardens in Tofino, BC, on February 24th to 26th. The workshop started off with introductions and warm-up games. For lunch, we were lucky to have the boys' basketball team from Ukulele cater almost every kind of traditional seafood. The gathering, making, and sharing of the traditional foods brought us all together and created a family-like environment. It was quite the experience for some of the youth, for it was their first time trying some of the traditional foods. The facilitators shared stories of our traditional teachings, and the elders shared their knowledge as well as different kinds of plants and herbs and their purposes. The traditional food we had ate was so fulfilling and energizing. A group of us went for a walk along Long Beach. Some had so much energy to burn, they went for a dip into the ocean. The beach was full of different creatures, excitement, and exploring. None of us wanted to leave, but it was getting dark and close to dinner. For dinner, we shared some more great traditional foods and enjoyed our time playing games, singing, watching short videos, and other activities. The next day was the colonization day. Our workshop got into depth of colonization and how it affected our traditional ways of living. We ate foods such as bacon, eggs, hash browns, hot dogs, chili, Kool-Aid, and more. We were blessed to have been supplied a lot of traditional foods, so we did not eat all colonization foods the entire day. By evening, almost everyone was exhausted. Most of us had noticed the difference between traditional and colonizational food, the impact it has on our bodies, energy level, and our appetite. The workshop was a great way to bring youth, the next generation, and elders with traditional teachings closer. Together, we can make a stronger and brighter future for our culture, our land, and most of all, our people.
And that was the digital story of Letitia Rampinen, a young woman from Newchalnuth Territory. Another story produced as part of the digital storytelling project was by Lenita Jimmy, titled Good Feelings.
Hello, my name is Lenita Jimmy. I am 18 years old. My mom is Elsie Jimmy from the Carrier Nation in Burns Lake. My father is Leonard Henry from Pocotin. I have noticed that my generation's version of traditional food has changed from foods such as sea urchin, ooligan, halibut, and so on, to foods such as Red Robins, McDonald's, Wendy's, and good home-cooked meals. But food still has the same effect of bringing people together. Whether it be growing it, shopping for it, preparing it, and eating it, food is also used to celebrate at birthdays, anniversaries, and potlatches. Potlatches are a cultural way of bringing people together, celebrate life, give names, memorials, and other cultural things. I am also learning how to traditional dance with the Newchalnuth drum group, which allows me to dance at potlatch parties. Growing up, I have learned how to cook some traditional foods and lots of non-traditional foods from my mom, grandma, and other family members. I have a huge family. I have always been told to cook with good feelings because whoever eats your cooking will feel your feelings. I love to bake things such as cookies and cupcakes. My favorite traditional foods are salmon and moose, elk, or deer meat. I believe that it is very important for youth to become connected with elders to learn about the cultural ways of life and traditional foods. I also believe that youth and children should eat healthier and become more active.
Good Feelings, a digital story produced by Lenita Jimmy. And the last digital story that we'll listen in on was produced by James Dakota Smith, a Kwakwaka'wakw youth from northern Vancouver Island, now living in Victoria. His video is titled The Way of Our Elders and reflects the way in which digital storytelling efforts by youth can equally be applied among those living within urban centers.
My name is James Dakota Smith, and I'm Kwakwaka'wakw from the Tlawitsis tribe. This being said, I would like to say that I'm very grateful and appreciative to the Coast Salish people whose territory I live in and feast in. This is the Victoria Native Friendship Center, and you know it, Victoria, BC. I got involved here in the youth department doing volunteer work and attending conferences through the youth mentor here. The mandate of the VNFC is to encourage and promote the well-being and health of urban Aboriginals. The VNFC is a place to gather information about many different things, like traditional foods, which has been a way for our people. We gather it, then process it, smoking fish and drying berries. These are just some examples. This is Carrie. She is the cook at the VNFC, which means she's in charge of the food here. Our community garden was too small, and Carrie had a vision for a bigger, more accessible garden for our community. The new community garden has potatoes, strawberries, raspberries, broccoli, fresh herbs, and plenty more. They even have a little smokehouse by the new community garden. Carrie and the Friendship Center provide lunch to the community and dinner at drop-in every day. We also have vegetarian cuisine for all those non-meat eaters, as well as water, apples, radishes, or even bread you are welcome to pick up at any time. The Friendship Center also has people come in from the community, such as fishermen, that sell traditional foods like crab to the staff and anyone who happens to be around at the Friendship Center at the time. The VNFC is a gathering place, and what this gathering place offers us is a place to share our knowledge, and what all this information can provide us with is better eating habits, for example, fast food, as opposed to our traditional foods. It's become almost too casual of a thing to go eat a Big Mac at McDonald's, rather than to sapa, which means to feast with grease, or glina in Kwakwala. For our people, food is more than edible energy, it's a medicine. We are genetically geared towards our traditional diet, so it should be easy to understand how the drastic change in our eating habits has had a negative effect, causing a rise in diabetes, heart problems, and obesity. We need to quit polluting our oceans. We need to go back to our old ways, the ways of our elders.
The Way of Our Elders, a digital story produced by James Dakota Smith. Again, all of these digital stories are available in their visual form by linking to them from the Deconstructing Dinner website at deconstructingdinner.ca and our June 3rd, 2010 broadcast. Many of those digital stories were shared at the 2010 International Congress of Ethnobiology held in Tofino, British Columbia, with many of the people in attendance coming from all over the world, some of whom were also Indigenous peoples and others who research the relationships Indigenous peoples have with their environments. What was clear following the forum where the Nashik Youth Council presented their digital storytelling productions was how inspirational their work was to those in attendance. People from South Africa, Australia, Peru, and other nations all mentioned that they would be bringing that inspiration back to their communities and their youth. One of those comments came from the president of the International Society of Ethnobiology, the host of the Congress. Maui Solomon is of the Moriori people from Rekohu, or Chatham Island, east of New Zealand. Maui now lives in Wellington, New Zealand.
Tēnā koutou, rangatahi mā. I just want to greet you, the young people, for your awesome presentation. My name is Maui Solomon, president of the ISC, and as such I want to say how inspirational your presentations were today, and that we've all learned a tremendous amount from what you've had to share with us, not only in terms of the knowledge and the courage and the vision that you young people are showing, but you've also taught us about how to give presentations. short, succinct, heaps of variety, lots of humour, and keeping everybody awake. So I thank you for that as well. But as an Indigenous person, Moriori from Rekohu, a little island down in the deep of the South Pacific, just east of New Zealand, and my people have been struggling to revive our culture and identity for the last 25-30 years because we were considered to be extinct. So we've had a pretty big struggle, and we've been sitting here taking notes about some of the things we can do with our youth down on our island. So I thank you on behalf of the Moriori people for giving us inspiration and knowledge and ideas that we can take back to our own community. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, hoko mena tai, me rongo.
Maui Solomon, the president of the International Society of Ethnobiology. Today's broadcast has been archived on our website at deconstructingdinner.ca and posted under the June 3rd, 2010 episode in part one of our Exploring Ethnobiology series. You can expect many more recordings from the conference that we attended, so stay posted either to our website, our Facebook page, or to your local radio station airing this weekly show. I should also acknowledge the support of Noreen Messer in helping facilitate the work of the Nashik Youth Council. Noreen is the capacity building coordinator for UATHLUK. Also to be acknowledged is the Vancouver Island and Coastal Communities Indigenous Food Network for supporting this work that we heard today, and it's on their YouTube page where all of the digital stories that we heard today are archived in their original visual formats. And to close out today's show, Here's one last short clip of one of the cutest digital stories shared as part of the Youth Forum at the Tofino Congress, and it features the youngest participant in this storytelling workshop, Tikwatin Rampanin, the son of John Rampanin, who we heard from earlier on the show. The production is titled Deekers in Secher Bay, and we have just a few clips from that production, and those are followed by the song of the Nechalnath peoples.
My name is Deekers. I go to Secher Bay. I have eight papas and daddy. I get crabs. I get oysters too. I go home and surf, dude.
That was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY, in Nelson, British Columbia. I've been your host, John Steinman. I thank my technical assistant, John Ryan. The theme music for Deconstructing Dinner is courtesy of Nelson area resident Adam Shake. This radio show is provided free of charge to campus community radio stations across the country and relies on the financial support from you, the listener. Support for the program can be donated through our website at deconstructingdinner.ca or by dialing 250-352-9600.